everyone. I'm Jensine Bard, and welcome to Testimony, where truth is told, lives are changed, and hope is given. Revelation 12:11 tells us that we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony, a testimony of your story for His glory. He has been called the Joseph Wambaugh of the 21st century. My next guest spent 26 years as a street agent for the FBI, many of which were undercover, with assignments lasting anywhere from a day to more than 3 years. He would successfully pose as a drug dealer, contract killer, fence, pedophile, degenerate gambler, weapons dealer, and white-collar criminal, working undercover against such diverse groups as La Cosa Nostra, the Sicilian Mafia, Mexican Mafia, Russian Mafia, Asian organized crime groups, and the Los Angeles-based street gangs. His successful infiltration of NAMBLA, North American Man-Boy Love Association, resulted in the arrest of what one defendant called 8 members of the, quote, inner circle. He has received numerous awards throughout his career, including the FBI Director's Award for Distinguished Service, 4 United States Attorney Awards for Distinguished Service, and numerous letters of commendation, including one from then U.S. Attorney Rudy Giuliani. Now retired, Bob is a member of the Writers Guild of America and the Writers Guild of Canada, and has written for television as well as being a technical advisor and consultant for such programs as Law and Order SVU and Sleeper Cell. He's appeared on The Oprah Winfrey Show, Christian Broadcasting Network, to discuss his role in the NAMBLA investigations. He is also a Marine Corps veteran and law school graduate, married with 2 children. Would you welcome with me today, ladies and gentlemen, the author of The Last Undercover, Enemies Among Us, and his latest, Targets Down, soon to be made into a major motion picture, my honored friend and hero to millions, Mr. Bob Hammer. Bob, welcome to Testimony.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You've received not only the commendation of your superiors in your role as an undercover operative, but also the grateful thanks of many in Hollywood from all spectrums of the entertainment industry in your efforts to enlighten all of us on the gross darkness that you had to personally witness. Before we begin to talk about this, however, in part one of our 2-part conversation today, can you start, Bob, by telling us how you came to know Jesus Christ and what propelled you into your life's work as an undercover FBI agent, and how were you able to make the two coexist?
Well, I grew up in a typical lower middle class Midwestern family. I grew up in the heartland, Ohio. My dad was a veteran of World War II, was a salesman. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. We had 3 boys in the household, which I think would drive just about any mother nuts. And she managed 3 very active young men that were extremely athletic and pretty busy. My dad never went to church. I think probably I could count on my hand a handful of times that he attended church, and usually it was because of some activity that we had. But Mom would take us every day downtown, or every Sunday downtown to a church. But it was really a more of a formal setting. That I didn't have a personal relationship with Jesus. But I grew up in the church in the sense that we went every Sunday. And it really wasn't until I went to college. I went to a small school in Indiana called Anderson University. It was Anderson College back then. Now it's a university. And it was there that I really started to delve into the Bible and began to examine not only my life, but my beliefs. But again, even though I spent 3 years in a Christian university and attended Bible classes and had to go to chapel twice a week, I still wasn't quite ready. And it wasn't until my first year of law school, after I'd already been commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps following my graduation from their officer candidate school program, and was in law school, that I really began to look at what I believed in and where I wanted my life to go and what direction and who I wanted to lead my life. And I can remember very vividly at the church that we attended in Cincinnati, Ohio. By that time I was married. We attended a church, an evangelist by the name of Sam Hines, and he was from Jamaica, and he was a large black man that had pink eyes, and he had just a mesmerizing voice, and he gave an altar call. And all I remember is I was sitting near the back, and before I even realized what had happened, something had lifted me up, and I was halfway down that aisle and went to the altar, and that was the time that I really turned my life over to Jesus and asked him to live in my heart, and I've been walking with him ever since, although he would probably admit that he probably should put me on a leash because I've haven't been nearly probably as faithful as I should have been. But that was my, I guess you could say, my initial coming to the Lord and my faith walk. To sort of follow up with your question, I then spent 4 years in the Marine Corps as a judge advocate. I'm sure many of your listeners have watched the TV show JAG, but I have to tell you that my experience in 4 years had nothing, there was no similarity between what I did and what happened on that TV show.
I was going to ask you that.
And I really was seeking something different. I wanted more excitement. The Marine Corps, at least, had instilled in me a warrior ethos. I wanted to serve a cause greater than myself, but honest to Pete, I found no excitement in the courtroom. I probably had close to 150 trials, everything from unauthorized absence to murder, but every case, despite what your listeners may see on TV, despite the fact that I grew up in that Perry Mason generation, every case came down to a procedural issue. Is the search legal? Is the confession admissible? It really was never a whodunit. And every trial we had came down to making sure that both sides dotted every I and crossed every T. And I found it extremely boring. And so it wasn't until I was trying to decide what I wanted to do with the rest of my life that I essentially ran across both the CIA and the FBI, and you asked me, you know, how did I get into the FBI, and how did my faith play a part in that?
Right.
And I think I have never had anything answered so quickly and so clearly for me than my entry into the FBI, and I have to tell you, I was stationed at Camp Pendleton in San Diego County. One day I was reading the Los Angeles Times, and there was an ad for case officers for the CIA. I applied. I went through a very extensive screening process. I flew back to Washington, D.C. three times, every time under an assumed name, paid cash for everything. This was well before 9/11. It was an exciting recruiting process. I mean, I'm meeting in safe houses. I'm being tested. I'm given intelligence tests, language aptitude tests, history tests, geography tests, world affairs tests, and I kept passing every phase of their application process. And about the last test they gave me was a personality test, and they scored you from a 0 to a 10, a 0 being someone who could live on a deserted island for the rest of his life, and a 10 being someone who had to be constantly surrounded by people. I have to admit, I skewed my answers, thinking they wanted somebody they could parachute behind enemy lines and then pick him up 3 months later. Psychologist came out and looked at me and shook his head, and he said, "I've never seen a 0 personality." I joke, my wife and I have been married for going on 38 years now, and the two constants in our house is that she constantly reminds me to put down the toilet seat, and she constantly reminds me that I am the only person ever declared by the federal government to be a zero personality.
That is unbelievable. And I just have to say, for those that may have just tuned in, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Bob Hammer, highly decorated former undercover FBI agent for 26 years and the author of three books, one called The Last Undercover, His True Life Story, the other, Targets Down and Enemies Among Us. Bob, please continue. We have a few minutes left. Let us hear the rest of your story.
Well, the CIA passed. They didn't really like lawyers, and they didn't really like zero personalities. And at the same time, I'd applied to the FBI. I'd gone through their process, the oral exam, the written exam. Essentially, they told me, you know, you've done well, but we have a one-year hiring freeze, and we're not taking anyone on for a year. I was getting out of the Marine Corps. I really didn't have a choice. I couldn't have stayed in the Marines because they were essentially reducing their forces at that time. I had less than a week to go in the Marine Corps. I was getting out. I wasn't satisfied with where my life was headed in terms of employment opportunities. I prayed one night, and I just said, God, you know we tithe. You'll get a bigger percentage, or you'll get more money if I take this job that I'd actually applied for and was accepted in Los Angeles. But I wish the FBI or the CIA would call. And the very next morning, the phone rang, and it was the FBI. The guy said, look, we just had someone drop out of our September class. Can you make it back here within a month to join the FBI and be and attend our academy? Now, you obviously are a devoted Christian, and I'm assuming most of your listeners are. You know, you might want to say that was some coincidental blessing, or it was just an accident that this person dropped out, but I am convinced that God made a place for me in the FBI, and that he needed me there for some reason. And that's why once I surrendered to him and surrendered my will, that's when the doors opened for me.
Wow. No, you know, Bob, I would just like to, for the record, say earlier you mentioned that maybe some of your past was a little suspect and you haven't always walked the perfect walk. For those that are listening, we all fall short of the glory of God. But I do believe, Bob, that God does have a divine destiny and purpose for each of us if we will but ask him. And you did that, and you put down your desires to pick up what he wanted for you. You know, I'm reminded of that scripture in Daniel 11:32 that says, those that know their God shall be strong and do exploits. And certainly this is what you have had to be in your role for 26 years as an undercover FBI operative, exposing some of the grossest evils to mankind and keeping the American public safe from these evils. In part two, which we are going to get into shortly, I would like for you to talk about your involvement in your infiltration into the NAMBLA organization. Thank you very much for being with us today on Testimony. And Bob, we look forward to part two of your testimony.
Thanks. Looking forward to part two.
If you would like more information, you can visit our website at jensinebard.com. That's one word, JENSINEBARD.com. Or write to us at Testimony, P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. That's P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. I'm Jensine Bard. Please join us again for Testimony. The sexual offenders with whom I was dealing were not those who, under cover of darkness, slipped past sleeping parents into the bedroom of unsuspecting children. These offenders began their quest in full view of an unsuspecting public. They were our sons' teachers, doctors, therapists, neighbors, friends, relatives. Their, quote, responsible behavior in public causes us to drop our guard. We somehow recognize the pervert lurking in the shadows, and as a result of that confidence, fail to see the predator in our midst. In part two of my conversation with our next guest, that expert you just heard was from a book called The Last Undercover. Would you welcome back to Testimony, highly decorated former undercover FBI agent, author, screenwriter, former lawyer and Marine, a true watchman on the wall, and the hero you are not hearing about on the 6 o'clock news, and my honored friend, Mr. Bob Hammer. Bob, welcome back to Testimony.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be back on.
Bob, it really is an honor to have you with us today. In part one of our conversation last week, you spoke about your faith as a Christian and how that propelled you toward your entrance into the FBI. This week, Bob, I want to focus on an organization you successfully helped to dismantle after 3 long years posing as a pedophile to unmask and bring down the organization known as NAMBLA, North American Man-Boy Love Association. For those who may have just tuned in, this is a sensitive subject. It's not for the faint of heart or mind, but it needs to be told. And we are grateful that my next guest is here today to expose this vile group and threat to the American family and every little unsuspecting boy seduced by this group and others like it. Bob, would you please tell us what NAMBLA is, how you became involved, and what proceeded from there?
Yeah, as we talked about last week, I spent most of my career undercover. I mean, I've been a contract killer, a drug dealer, an international arms merchant, but my most difficult assignment was that, as posing as a pedophile, posing as a member of NAMBLA. Initially, the FBI was investigating a travel agent that operated out of the Los Angeles area who was putting together overseas tours, actually they were sex tours, to Thailand, and he was focusing on what these men refer to themselves as boy lovers, or BLs, and he was putting together these tours, getting these men here in the United States, taking them over to Thailand, and introducing them to what they call the boy bars, and where they could have essentially unfettered sex with little boys in Thailand. I was tasked, because I was certified to work undercover, I was tasked with going undercover, trying to meet with this travel agent and arrange for a trip over to Thailand and with the men that were making this trip. Unfortunately for us, the case didn't go the direction that we thought it would, principally because of 9/11 happened. The bureau's changed its thrust, and we were focusing so much on terrorism and weren't allowed to travel overseas other than in furtherance of terrorism investigations. But as part of my backstory, as part of my cover, I joined NAMBLA. I mean, it was only a matter of sending in $35, and now I'm a member of a group. I began receiving, even though the case against the travel agent fell apart, I began receiving correspondence from the NAMBLA leadership. They asked me to write letters and send Christmas cards to their incarcerated members. They have a magazine. I soon was writing for their magazine, and close to a year and a half before they would actually invite me to any face-to-face meetings. And then I attended 2 of their very super-secret national conferences and was dealing face-to-face with these members. And as you mentioned, eventually we were able to put together an undercover operation in which we arrested 8 members of the group's inner circle.
Wow. The NAMBLA organization was founded in 1979, as you talk about in your book, and they originally had aligned themselves with the ILGT. Can you talk about that a little bit and what caused the break?
Well, there was an organization, the International Lesbian, Gay, Transsexual, Transgendered Association, whatever. It was a group that was born out of the radical gay agenda of the 60s. NAMBLA was part of that and was actually part of that radical gay community. Eventually, they were kicked out of the association, and there are gays, you know, many gays have distanced themselves from NAMBLA. I mean, I look at this truly as more of a child predator problem, a child molestation problem, a child abuse problem, than I do as a gay problem. Although virtually every man that I ran into referred to himself as gay or referred to himself as a boy lover. Some, depending on how you wanted to identify homosexuality, they believed they were either gay or they were only attracted to underage boys. But they are actually, you know, many within NAMBLA, many in the gay movement look down upon NAMBLA because of their sexual attraction to little boys.
This is a tough subject, and I want to kind of go back to our first conversation. You initially had applied with the CIA. You had taken a personality test. You beautifully passed all the other tests, but when it came to the personality test, you were giving them answers you thought they wanted to hear, but the score gave you a zero personality. And I have to say for our listeners, you do not have a zero personality. In your book, The Last Undercover, you have had to play the role of an actor. You have had to become that pedophile, that degenerate gambler, that weapons dealer, that white-collar criminal. You have had to interface successfully with La Cosa Nostra, the Sicilian mafia, Mexican mafia, Russian mafia, Asian organized crime. You talk about this in your book, The Last Undercover, and you have other stories in your latest, Targets Down and Enemies Among Us. This section of our testimony, we're focusing on the NAMBLA organization. Let's get to some questions, Bob. What are some of the target places NAMBLA would stake out in their quest for young boys, and what can you advise parents today to protect their children and educate them from these predators?
Well, clearly, I think Willie Sutton, the bank robber, said it best when they asked him why did he rob banks, and he said that's where the money is. Truly, these men that are attracted to boys are going to go where the boys are. They're going to get involved in professions where they can have access to children. And this is true of all child molesters. I mean, they get involved in the schools, in the coaching, in this place wherever they can go to socially interact. In the NAMBLA conference, a good example. There was a debate in the last conference that I attended where they were going to have their next national conference, and when it came down to voting, they voted on San Diego because of Legoland. The men wanted to come out from, most of them lived, well, they lived throughout the United States, but they wanted to come to San Diego because of Legoland. They wanted to hang out where children were hanging out. As I talk about in the book, there was a time that we actually went to Toys R Us in Times Square, because that's where the kids were, and that's where these men wanted to go. So I think you have to understand that these men are attracted to places where children are going to be, and so we as parents and grandparents have to be alert to that. Now, unfortunately, there's nothing wrong with a pedophile sitting in a public park. I mean, nothing illegal about a pedophile sitting in a public park watching children play on the playground. It's only illegal when they act out upon it. So I think what we have to think, I use an acronym. I wish I could give you a checklist so that if they meet these criteria, then we know it's a pedophile and we can either put him in jail or steer clear of him. But I like to use the acronym ACT, Affirm, Communicate, and Trust. I know that a child who is affirmed, a child who is loved, who believes in himself and believes that his parents love him, is less likely to fall victim to these men. As you mentioned in the excerpt that you read from the book, what I'm dealing with, what I'm talking about now, are persuasion predators. I'm not talking about these men that break into your house at night and snatch the child out of the bed. I'm talking about these people that persuade the child to engage in this type of conduct, who persuade the parent to believe that everything they're doing for the child is good. A child who's affirmed isn't as likely to fall to the wiles of these persuasion predators. Communicate. Kids that believe that they can talk to their parents about anything are less likely to be seduced by these people. these kids, the ones that I dealt with, the ones that were successfully targeted by NAMBLA members, were seeking a father figure. They were seeking some man that would talk to them and listen to them and communicate with them. So if a child has that at the home, he doesn't have to run out to and talk to this man outside the home in order to find this. And finally, it comes down to trust. I mean, Ronald Reagan, when he was talking about the Russians, said trust but verify. I think you would agree with me. You know, we don't want to make all these listeners paranoid and lock their kids up until they're 18. We want to trust people. We as Christians trust people, but we want to verify as well. If there's an adult who's saying inappropriate things about your child, paying too much attention, then that should put you on alert. If your child doesn't want to be with an adult, maybe he doesn't want to sit on Uncle Harry's lap because Uncle Harry's got bad breath, but maybe it's because Uncle Harry has done something inappropriate and the child is uncomfortable with it and maybe doesn't want to talk to you about it or doesn't quite understand what to say or how to couch the words, but he's just uncomfortable. So act, affirm, communicate, and trust. That's the way we protect our children.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Bob. What made your three-year undercover infiltrating NAMBLA worth it? Or was it worth it to you?
Oh, no, it was absolutely worth it. Mainly because we were able to take eight of their inner circle group off the street. We were able to put them in prison. One man received 30 years, another 14 years, others several years in federal prison. More importantly, if you believe the NAMBLA leadership, as a result of our infiltration and the conviction of eight members of the group, they are no longer meeting publicly. They don't have the meetings like they had before. They have filed affidavits against me claiming that I violated their First Amendment right, and now are claiming they can't meet because of the FBI's infiltration. So that, to me, is the strength of this investigation and the fact that we just alerted parents again to the people that were out there. And I hope put them on notice that there are people out there that want to harm our children, and we have to do something. We have to take positive steps to protect our children.
Bob, thank you very much for being with us on Testimony. We would love to have you come back. God bless you for the work you are doing and have done. You are a hero. Thank you, Bob.
I appreciate you having the strength to allow me to discuss it. Thank you.
God bless you, Bob. If you would like more information, you can visit our website at jensinebard.com. That's one word, jensinebard.com. Or write to us at Testimony, P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. That's P.O. Box 1333, Palm Desert, California, 92261. I'm Jensine Bard. Please join us again for Testimony.